It's time for the Financial Cafe, airing every Saturday morning at 9 a.m. on 88.7 WSIE The Sound. Today's show is underwritten by The Chef Shop, your hometown kitchen accessory store, where a good cup of coffee starts every day right. The views expressed at the Financial Cafe are those of the hosts and do not represent the views of Southern Illinois University Edwardsville, the SIU Board of Trustees, or WSIE Radio. Securities offered through Nickel Investors Corporation at No. 1 Executive Park, Granite City, Illinois, member FINRA and SIPC.
If I had a million dollars,
if I had a million dollars,
if I had a million dollars,
I'd be rich.
And now, welcome to the Financial Cafe and our hosts, Larry Lexo and John Graney.
Hello, folks. We're back for another episode of the Financial Cafe, where we blend financial advice with a good cup of coffee. If you caught last week's show, you know already that we are talking about annuities. And last week, we went over some key terms, definitions, the different types of annuities, and we wrapped up the show with Larry talking about the different insurance agencies that rate insurance companies, given that insurance companies are the ones that provide annuities for us to consider for our investment portfolios. You also know that my role in this series of discussions is devil's advocate. I consider myself pretty good at it.
No argument there.
I've been easy on you so far. This is the one where it starts getting tough, Larry. So how are you today, Larry?
I'm doing wonderful. And I got to tell you, John, I just thoroughly enjoyed last week's show talking about annuities, a fun topic for a Saturday morning. And I don't know, we can ask our listeners, but I think I held my own pretty well.
We'll see. Well, let's wrap it up when we get the end. The fat lady is not in the building yet. So
wait, I thought I said, no.
So with that, we were discussing the different insurance agencies and how they rate insurance companies, given that insurance companies are one that provides annuities to the investors. That's a key way to evaluate annuities. And today's discussion will get into different ways to evaluate your annuity. A couple more terms and definitions as far as some of the bells and whistles that can come with each annuity. And then the expenses. This is where I get to have some fun with this, because if you caught my tone in the last episode, I'm not a fan of annuities. Larry did get me to think about. I did make one concession, but all in all,
two.
One.
Okay.
I got it written down right here. There was one. But it's an arrow in the quiver. It's a tool. I think they're oversold. I think they're expensive, and we'll get into. When is it appropriate? When's it not? So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Larry. We're going to go through some more definitions, and then we're going to get into the different ways to evaluate these products.
Thanks, John. Great having you here, and be back on the air again. I want to thank WSIE Radio for giving us the opportunity to present a little information about different products about financial planning, something near and dear to our hearts.
Yes, thank you for having us come back.
Absolutely. And where we blend the financial advice with a great cup of coffee.
I do wonder, though, with all those disclosures on the front end, it seems like they're trying to really distance themselves from our opinions.
Well, yeah, I know, but it's politics. What can I say? We were talking about what are the most important things to consider when looking at an annuity. And I'll go back to what I said at the end of the show last week. The strength of the insurance company is a number one first top thing to look at. Insurance companies are rated by four agencies, AM Best, Fitch, Moody's, and Standard & Poor's. And in my opinion, again, which is pretty much what the show is based on, besides John's, is they need an A rating or an A-plus rating from all of those agencies.
It's all about you, Larry.
I know. It deals with their claims-paying ability. And that's kind of important because you're giving them money to invest or to, well, they invest it in all cases. Or to put into subaccounts to grow for the future, and in exchange for a payment, which is going to last your lifetime and or your significant other or your spouse's lifetime. And in some cases, you grow it and take a lump sum back out, which on some contracts you can do. Again, a little variance in the way they operate, but in many cases, it's defining that lifetime income. After you've determined you have a company that is A-plus rated with all of the rating agencies, you have to start digging down deep into the contract, and it is a legal contract. So when you get it, read it. Take a look at it. Make sure you know and understand what's in there. If you don't, set up an appointment with your agent, who should have explained all of these aspects to you, and dig into it. Again, you have 30 days from when you receive your annuity contract to change your mind. It's not like the three-day period on buying a house or with returning different products. You have a three-day free look. You actually have 30 days on an annuity contract.
It's going to take you that long just to read the contract.
It may take you that long to read the contract, but do it. Take the time, get into it, and make sure you understand what you have. The first thing is the expenses. One of the expenses is the mortality and expense costs. That's the cost the insurance company charges for the privilege of putting your money into the contract so they can invest it to provide a future payment for you and or your beneficiary. There also may be a contract charge. This can be exhibited as a specific dollar amount in most cases. It may be zero. Many contracts, if you deposit more than $100,000, they do not charge a contract charge. But if you deposit $99,000, they're going to charge $35 to $100 per year. And that is just, again, for the privilege of having the contract with the insurance company. If you are using a variable type product or even an index type product, you have investment expenses. These expenses are based on the subaccounts, the manager. It could be many managers that you know, both on the institutional and the retail side, that is available. And they have a specific, what we call basis point, a little basic mathematic education. 100 basis points is equal to 1%. So if the contract has a 50 basis point expense, as any one of these items, mortality or investment charge, then that's 0.5% calculated on an annual basis. So make
sure. And in all fairness, the expense ratio, that applies to mutual funds if you were to do your investing outside of an annuity contract. It applies to ETFs. So in all fairness, that's across the board for almost all investment products.
Yeah, I'm glad you're being fair, John.
I have my moments.
All investment products do have investment expense, and you need to know what it is, and you need to know if it's too high or too low or just right, as they say. There are also, after you get past the basic mortality expense costs, the contract charge, the investment expenses, then you have rider costs. And a rider cost is an election. There are some contracts have riders, some do not. Some are what we call stripped down, and they're just basic contracts. There are actually some contracts out there that do not have any mortality and expense costs. So it is a very basic investment contract designed for tax-deferred accumulation, utilizing subaccounts so you don't have to pay tax along the way. And with no M&E, if it has no contract charge, you're getting down to a fairly inexpensive contract, which I favor above many of the others because you're not paying for things you don't need or want.
So what are some of these riders that you
speak
of?
Some of the riders, well, we got to touch on one more thing, and that's surrender charges. I've seen surrender charges, believe it or not, on some annuity contracts go out 20 years. And what that means is once you buy the contract and you pass the 30-day free look period, it's your contract. And if you want to get your money out, you want to change your mind, you want to do something else, it may cost you, and I think the word is dearly, because I've seen surrender charges upwards of 15 and 20%. And I in good faith, I could not put anyone into any type of contract that had a surrender that lasted more than 7 to 10 years, and that may be even pushing the outer edge, and certainly not anything that would eat up the contract before they would even have an opportunity to take advantage of the benefit that they are paying for.
So what you're telling me is I do this investment, and in year 5, something happens, and I need to get to the money. In order for that to happen, I'm going to have to pay a penalty to get my money.
If your contract, let's say it has a 7-year surrender charge, and in year 5 you want to get to your money, most contracts will allow you to get to up to 10% of the total contract value for that year without paying any penalty. Again, it's in the fine print. Make sure you know what it is. If you want to get to 15%, then you'll get the first 10% free. The other 5% is going to be subject to a surrender charge. In many cases, the contracts that I see, you might be down to a 2 or 3% surrender charge, which is not too terribly bad. So the rule of thumb here is if you enter into any contract, I don't care if it's an annuity or any other contract that is out there, make sure you know the duration of the contract you're agreeing to. And if it is not your intention to leave the money there that long, then you really ought to think twice or three or maybe even four times about whether you want to get into that contract or not. But keep in mind, annuities are long-term investments. You don't get into an annuity unless it's an immediate annuity where you start beginning to receive your payments immediately. You don't get into an annuity that's deferred without the intent of leaving the money there over an extended period of time. Which brings up another thing to mind. There are two types of surrender charges. This is very important. There is a contract-dated surrender charge. The only ones that I like using. Contract-dated surrender charge says the surrender charge time period clock starts the day the contract is issued. If it's 3 years, 5 years, 7 years, whatever it happens to be, at the end of that period, you never have a surrender charge again. There are other contracts that have what we call rolling surrender charges. So if you're using it as an accumulation vehicle and you're funding it over a period of time in a series of monthly, quarterly, semi-annual, or annual payments, every time you put a dollar in the contract, that dollar is now subject to the full surrender charge again. And 7 to 10 years down the road, you may say, well, my surrender charge is over. It was only 7 years. I'm in year nine. But if you were funding it every year, that last dollar you put in still has a 7-year surrender charge on it. So, you know, rolling versus contract dated surrender charges, if you're going to do, you know, one lump sum and done, then it doesn't matter because there is no rolling surrender charge. You're not putting additional money into it. But you need to know, make sure of what you have. So you're looking at mortality expense costs, contract charge, investment expense charges, and the rider expenses. So let's talk about some of the riders. Probably one of the most common riders that I see is, and there are different terms. You may or may not find some of these in the Infopedia that's out there on the web. But in the financial arena, depending on the company, there are different names for the different benefits. And one of the living benefits is a guaranteed minimum accumulation benefit. The guaranteed minimum accumulation benefit, there I said it again, it's guaranteed. The insurance company is,
relax, Chris.
Yeah, the insurance company is guaranteeing that your contract will grow at a specified minimum rate, regardless of whatever the underlying investments are. So a good example of that in a variable contract might be that you have a 4% or a 5% guaranteed minimum accumulation benefit, and you're investing in subaccounts, which are in the stock market, in the equity bond market. And if your contract for year one, at the end of year one, 365 days, your contract has earned 8% and your guarantee was 4%, well, you get 8% that your investment amount has gone up. However, in the 3 out of 10 years where the market goes down or is zero, if the market, say, was zero or negative, then your account is credited at the 4% or 5%, whatever the guaranteed rate is. Now, keep in mind that a guaranteed minimum accumulation benefit may only affect your future income or your future ability to draw income off the contract. So you have to be careful with that and in its use. And there is a cost associated with that. The cost of an accumulation benefit, again, based on the company, could be anywhere from 30 to 80 basis points. So it can be very expensive. And the contract may indeed say current cost of this benefit is whatever, 30 basis points, but may go up to, and then you need to know what the upper limit is and whether the insurance company has ever gone up above the base rate of charge or not. Any thoughts about the guaranteed minimum accumulation benefit, John?
It sounds expensive to me.
Well, it is expensive. Yeah, pillow factor comes into play again, but something to just understand and be aware of. The second one that I see very commonly is a guaranteed minimum income benefit, And this is definitely the one where many of them have a 5% roll-up or 5% per year compounded rate of increase. Let's say you put $100,000 into a contract and you elect a 5% GMIB. Then at the end of year one, if the contract is flat, it's still worth $100,000, your contract value for income purposes only is going to be $105,000. At the end of year two, let's say the contract was flat again, you still only have $100,000 in principal. There's going to be 5% added on to $105,000 and so forth and so on. If the contract performs or outperforms the 5% roll-up for that year, then you get locked in at the higher rate. So for income purposes, you have the higher rate. That contract works well if you are intending to annuitize or to take a series of lifetime income payments from the contract for your future value. It's not intended if you're just trying to grow the money and possibly take it out or to utilize a death benefit. Another living benefit is a guaranteed minimum withdrawal benefit, where similar to the other two, but different. You have to gauge how it's written, and you're buying basically a future guarantee of what you can take off of the contract on a year-to-year basis. Again, the terms may change in how they describe them, but the effect is that there are guarantees, there are costs associated with the guarantees, and I know John's sitting over chomping at the bit to talk about what these costs can do to your contract.
Well, right now it seems to be fee after fee after fee. You are getting something, but as long as all this is fairly and accurately conveyed to the investor, and not buried in the contract fine print, and then the investor really does understand what they're paying for. But let's just take a look here. I have a hypothetical. Mortality and expense risk, 1.18%. And this is off an article that I pulled off the internet. Administrative fees were 19 basis points or 0.19%. The minimum death benefit rider, we haven't talked about that yet, but that was a little over 1%. And then this one did use the withdrawal benefit. I'm sorry, the death benefit rider was a little over 60 basis points. The lifetime withdrawal benefit was a little over 1%. And then the average fund expense for the investments, because this is a variable annuity that we're looking at, was 94 basis points. All in, you're just a little under 4%. Now, you're getting some guarantees, but if your expense is 4%, and then let's just say inflation is 3%, your investments need to earn 7% to break even.
That pretty much slices and dices it. I have to agree with you on that, John.
Okay, now that's just a variable annuity. That's one type, and I've made pretty clear that I'm not a fan of variable annuities. Haven't been sold on the indexed ones yet, but these expenses really start to add up. And when they're presented in ways, 19 basis points is less than 0.2%. But once you start adding these up, it gets to be pretty significant and over time can really have an impact on the, quote, accumulation phase of your annuity.
Typically, when you're presented with an annuity contract, then most agents, if they are experienced and if they are legitimate, I should say, we'll give you a hypothetical illustration, and in many cases, by securities law, it presents the contract in many different ways. So it may say an average rate of return based on an average rate of return and current expenses. Here's what the contract would look like in 10 years, 20 years, 30 years down the road. They are also required to assume the contract earns nothing. So if you have zero earnings, what does the contract look like with the expense drain on the account balance, and how is it affected relating to the guaranteed benefits you've selected?
I'm glad you pointed that out, because I have seen these illustrations, hypotheticals, and the earnings rate is, we'll say, a little generous. And if the investor doesn't really understand what's trying to be explained to them and the earnings rate that's being used, can be a little bit misleading. So I'm glad that there is a requirement that if you earn zero, It'll show you exactly how all this will play out. It can be eye-opening.
The information is there. It's up to the agent, in my opinion, to make sure that you understand and that they explain, he or she explains in detail exactly how the contract works. Let me give, before we go on to death benefit, let me give you an example. I'm in a situation, to pick on myself, where I have a very, very small pension from a company I worked with for a number of years, and I haven't decided yet if I'm going to take it as a series of lifetime payments or a lump sum at that point in time. But when I turn, who knows, 65, maybe 70, I don't plan on ever stopping what I'm doing because it's too much fun, especially when I have John across the console giving me a hard time. But I don't
keeping
have
young,
it.
Keeping you young.
Yeah, thank you, John. You're doing a good job, I hope. I do have a pension. I do have Social Security, and that is an annuity. So I have Social Security. I know what that payment's going to be, and I recommend you find out. Log on to the Social Security website. You'll go through a series of questions that hopefully you can remember the answer to and pass. They may be things as interesting as at one point in your life you lived on this street, and they'll list four or five streets. And if you remember which one is correct, then you may go to the second question, which said at one point in your life you owned this vehicle. And that may have been 20, 30 years ago.
Big brother's always watching.
So they know a lot more about you. And at one point, you may have had a savings account with this investment institution. Assuming you get all the answers to the questions correct, which I did, by the way, then you can log on to Social Security. You can run future benefit estimates. You can look at your current benefit. And we're not really here to talk about Social Security, but let me just say that we will at a future show. It is complicated, and it is extremely important, whatever benefit there is available for you or your significant other, that you understand it, you know how it works, and what the payouts are going to be. So I'll stop there.
Well, we did explain early on the first episode that we do have tangential disease where we can get caught on tangents, and you know, we help each other bring us back to what's on topic here, so let's get back to annuities.
You're trying to tell me something, John?
Not at all.
Okay. All right, annuities. My example, I have Social Security. I may or may not elect a small pension, but that's it, other than my investment savings through my IRAs and 401k plan. So the question is, do I want to make sure that I have a pension-like payment that is guaranteed to last my lifetime and the lifetime of my spouse, Diane? She would prefer we did. And so I'm looking at, and John, I have to reveal something about myself you may or may not know, but here it is on the air. I own an annuity, and it is a variable annuity, and it has a guaranteed benefit. So that at that point, wherever in the future that I decide to elect that income stream, I have established a baseline. Social Security plus that annuity is enough to cover what I call my needs. You know, it's going to pay for the taxes. It's going to pay for insurance. It's going to pay for food, shelter, gas, travel, whatever I want to do in retirement. And I know that number is there regardless of what happens to me, regardless of what happens to my spouse. And potentially some of that may even go on to our daughter. So that's my base. And a lot of times if people don't have pensions other than Social Security, if that's not enough to give them income to cover their needs, then we may look at building a pension. And that's one way to do it, through a variable annuity with a guaranteed payout for life.
And there's a lot of similarities between our wives, and I can see that would give Diane her peace of mind, just like as I mentioned in the last episode, it would give my wife, Amy, her peace of mind. So that was my one concession.
That was two, I think, at least. But anyway.
One concession done twice.
One. All right. Let's talk about death benefits. Why is this important? Well,
we're all going to die.
Taxes and death. That's about the only things we can count on. Death benefits are varied among contracts. It may be as basic as the contract value. If you're in a contract, whatever the contract cash value investment account is worth, that's what you get as a death benefit. That always is minus what you have taken out as payments in the interim. So it could be a lot less than what you put into the contract initially. There are, however, features. You can elect a step-up death benefit, whereas the contract grows, It's not only the principal that you put in, but it is stepped up over time to whatever the contract value is, and sometimes you can lock it in. So even if the contract value goes back down from withdrawals or whatnot, the death benefit stays at a higher rate. There are also enhanced death benefits where you can buy a death benefit that is, I've seen, as much as 30 or 40% greater than whatever the contract value is. The intention there is to help offset taxes that are going to be due upon death. So you have an enhancement. There is a cost related to each of these. So what is the legacy you want to live? You want to leave to your family, whether it's a spouse or a child or whoever it happens to be. It determines which death benefit you want to elect and what the actual cost of that death benefit is, and does it make sense on what you're doing. We talked a little bit earlier about who sells annuity contracts. You may run into insurance agents who are only licensed for insurance in the state, whether it's Illinois or Missouri or wherever you're at. They can sell fixed annuities. They can sell indexed annuities. Although that may be changing next year when the Department of Labor fiduciary rule comes into play, because they will then be considered a fiduciary, and many insurance agents do not want that label. But they can currently do indexed and fixed annuities. Brokers, it requires a securities license in the state of Illinois, Series 63, minimum securities license, to sell variable annuities or anything with an underlying equity bond-based investment. So know who you're working with. I'm going to refer you back to episode number one, how do you choose a good financial advisor? And soon you'll be able to do that. Refer back to episode one, because we're going to be podcasting these to a blog with a future address. So you can go back, listen to episode one again, find out how to choose that financial advisor to make the election on your annuity. And that will give you a good start in how to determine what your needs are. There is one other type of annuity. I bring it up only because it's been in a lot of the news lately, and it is called a QLAC. And you kind of go, okay, what is a QLAC?
Is it related to AFLAC?
It's not AFLAC. It's okay. QLAC. There was a pun there. It was, you know, promotion, I guess. QLAC is a qualified longevity annuity contract. These have only been available for a short period of time from insurance carriers. Most people are aware of the fact that you have to take minimum required distributions beginning at age 70 and a half from all of your qualified accounts. So a QLAC was developed for the individual who doesn't want to take minimum required distributions from all of their assets beginning at age 70 and a half. They can actually deposit up to $125,000, $250,000 if the contract is for both them and their significant other or spouse. And that money goes into a fixed annuity. It is not available to go into a variable annuity. It grows at the fixed rate, tax deferred past 70 and a half to age 80, up to age 85. The individual can actually choose what age to start taking payments from it. But typically, if you're deferring taxes and you have enough money to live on, you don't want to pay the taxes at age 70 and a half. They defer it to age 85. And then at that point, you must begin taking money out of the contract. But you've, you know, gotten an extra 14, 15 years of tax deferred growth rather than having to pay it as you're living your life. So a QLAC is just another tool in the old quiver, John, that we have to look
at. Absolutely. And that, you know, that's a good point. We were talking about how to evaluate the advisor, how do you evaluate an annuity. And bringing the two together, if you are working with an advisor and they are leading with you should have an annuity and they are not presenting other options, that should be a red flag for you.
Run!
If you have, you know, you hear, have I got a deal for you? I actually heard one presented one time, the way it was presented, the advisor said, what if I told you I could get X percent for you? Would you do it? And I was quite squeamish about that. I thought this is just the wrong way to present this type of vehicle. So again, going back to the gut check, if you're being presented with something and no other options are being presented, they aren't looking for different ways to build around this annuity with your portfolio, it's a red flag. That's something that you should say, you know what, I want to think about this and get a second opinion.
We're coming down to the last 5 minutes or so of the show. Man, that time goes fast, John, when you're talking about all these fun topics. And I want to touch on our underwriter, the Chef Shop here in Edwardsville. Chef Shop is located at 2320 Troy Road, Edwardsville. They're in a Schnucks Plaza right next to Target. Their phone number is 659, that's area code 618, 659-9840. Chef's Shop at prodigy.net, CHEFS.SHOPPE at prodigy.net. Go in and talk to Nancy or Scott, the owners, and tell them you heard the show. Let them know that you appreciate the fact that we're sharing some educational information on a very complicated but popular topic in the financial arena. And we'll tell you about the next coffee that we kind of thought would be appropriate with the weather it's been in July, kind of warm. And I'm calling on Christmas in July, John.
I thought the 97 degrees felt a little cooler today.
Yeah, it was a little cooler because we're reviewing the coffee today as a Christmas cookie. They do have it available all year, so you can celebrate Christmas in July as we are. The Christmas cookie is a special recipe of cinnamon, nuts, and vanilla blended together with just the right amount of cream to come up with a wonderful tasting coffee. And that's the one we happen to be enjoying today and hope you will too.
I like it. Again, it goes back. I can detect hazelnut anywhere, so I know there's a little bit of hazelnut in here. And for the listeners that have listened to other shows, you know that I am more of a straight-up coffee drinker. But at Christmas time, this would certainly fit in, and it did make the 97 degrees outside seem a little better.
Christmas in July, take advantage of it. It's coming your way on WSIE 88.7 radio. What are some of the downsides to annuities, John? We have about a minute left, so we'll give you that.
I'm going to start talking like one of those disclosure guys at the end of it. They're oversold, obviously. We talked about that. The fees and expenses. Again, if you're taking into account inflation, when you start talking that your break-even point is 6, 7, 8%, that's a tough hurdle for your investments to continually beat to keep you in the black. The appropriateness. I can see, and I will concede again, that there are situations that, hey, this is appropriate. It depends on the investor's personality, some income needs, and so forth. So that works as well.
What about illiquidity?
Well, the surrender charges, that's a tough hurdle to get over. I mean, you're locking your money up for, maybe 7 years, if not more. So again,
I would never go more.
You would have to really understand the investment and know that you're in a financial situation that you can commit that money to this investment, knowing that you really can't have access to it. Again, it's like a 401k IRA type contribution. You can't get to the money without penalties until somewhere down the road.
Yeah, I think I would like to think we've done a fair job at talking about many of the options, good pro and con. I will say annuities can provide some predictability in an unpredictable world if that's what the client is looking for. And according to a recent study that was just completed, the major issues that Americans today are concerned about are longevity risk, outliving their money. If you start at age 65, you live to 95, that's a lot of years to provide income sufficient to cover your needs and your wants. They're concerned about market risk, so guarantees can affect that. The impact of taxes. Sure, everyone feels we're not paying enough in taxes. Inflation risk certainly is going to be an issue. Healthcare expenses. Would I ever put 100% of my assets in an annuity? Absolutely not. But I would consider putting a portion, at least to build that underlying pension. So we'll talk more about this in the future. But for today, we're going to wrap up the Financial Cafe on WSIE FM 887. We thank WSIE for giving us the opportunity to be with you. We thank the Chef Shop. Certainly, Scott and Nancy for bringing us another wonderful coffee, the Christmas cookie, to sample in July. And we'll be on again next week. What's our topic next week, John?
Why don't we continue with going into troubled waters and do active versus passive management?
Okay, this should be fun.
Larry, I'm going to give Larry the chance to play devil's advocate with me next week.
Yeah, we'll see how good I am at it.
Oh, I think it'll be fine.
I think that'll do it. We'll talk to you later.
You've been listening to The Financial Cafe, airing every Saturday at 9 a.m. on 88.7 WSIE The Sound. Today's show is underwritten by The Chef Shop in Edwardsville, your hometown kitchen accessory store, where a good cup of coffee starts every day right. Listeners are invited to send your questions regarding retirement, investments, or any other financial topic that may pique your interest. Send the questions to John at jgraney@nickelfinancial.com or to Larry at lexo@nickelfinancial.com. John and Larry will discuss those questions each week during their Q&A session. If you prefer, they will respond to you in private. Thanks for listening to The Financial Cafe on 88.7 WSIE The Sound.